Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and thanks so much for listening on this Thanksgiving 2012. I hope you are all home and safe and find us a reasonable companion in your preparations for feasts or travels to feasts you don't have to prepare. We're going to play you some conversations from earlier this year that I know you enjoyed based on your many comments. You'll hear some great voices and great music. We'll have a little talk about the miracle of food, and we'll look back one last time on the election of 2012 that seemed like it would never go away. But we begin with the discussion of hunger and social need here in New York City and around the United States. The recession has prolonged and extended the need for social programs, and it has enlarged the population of the homeless and the poor. Joel Berg is executive director of the New York City Coalition Against Hunger and a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He says the good news about the recession that didn't get much mention in this just passed election campaign is that social programs managed to prevent widespread starvation in the U.S. and hold the line on what he calls food insecurity.
The safety net worked incredibly well. The reason the food stamps rolls expanded so greatly under President Bush and President Obama is that the need expanded. If we understand there's a long-term drought, and as a result of that, there are more wildfires, and as a result of that, we need to spend more money on firefighting, why don't we all understand that when there's a long-term recession, there's more hunger, and we need to spend more money on fighting hunger? That being said, these programs are still under a grave threat. The Democratic-run Senate has pushed forward $4.5 billion in cuts in the SNAP food stamps program. The last House review of this before the election would have had three times that many cuts. So I just wrote President Obama urging him to keep his pledge that he made in 2008 to end child hunger by 2015 as a down payment on ending all hunger in America. But to do that, first he's going to have to pledge to veto any further cuts in hunger programs.
So to make a pledge of ending childhood hunger in the United States, you really need to begin with the existing food stamp program and build from there. How would you do it?
Half the people in the food stamp SNAP program are children. That was something that was left out entirely of the last year of national debate. Our U.S. Senator here in New York State, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, has proposed actually increasing food stamps allotment from what we call the thrifty food plan to the so-called low-cost food plan. That's a wonky set of terms, but what it basically means is, if enacted, would increase the purchasing power of people in that program to be able to buy healthier food. We have to restore the cuts that were passed in the program as part of the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill. Bottom line is more working people who are low income need to be eligible for the program, especially families with kids, and we need to ensure that these benefits last throughout a month.
And part of the Kirsten Gillibrand proposal is to create inducements. Purchasing power is part of it, to create inducements to have a healthier diet in a more sustained way, which then has other sorts of health benefits to people in poverty.
Yeah, Senator Gillibrand's proposal would add to the food stamp SNAP program extra money to help people buy more healthy food. Some other people have sort of warped that proposal and used this as an excuse to take money away. The fact of the matter is people on the food stamp SNAP program shop currently just as healthily as other low-income people do. They really need extra economic power, not extra lecturing about their foods. We've proved we have a CSA project through the New York City Coalition Against Hunger that brings fresh produce into low-income neighborhoods. We've proved if you build it, they will come. If you make fresh, healthy food more nutritious, more available, more affordable in low-income neighborhoods, people will line up to get it.
And in terms of building that infrastructure on a national basis, what sorts of laws could actually make something like a Whole Foods in every neighborhood, or a minimum basic selection to qualify to get zoning in a particular neighborhood and to be able to offer various kinds of junk food? You also need to offer other sorts of things. What kinds of regulations would create this infrastructure?
First of all, people have to understand the full scope of the problem. Today in America, 50 million of our neighbors live in households that can't afford enough food. So physical access to food is important, and the Obama administration and many states and localities have tried working on incentive programs for supermarkets, for farmers markets, etc. But that's no substitute for also increasing the economic purchasing power of low-income families to be able to afford the more nutritious food. And so we have to focus on both at once. And the federal, state, and local governments all have roles to play.
On some level, what you're describing here and these numbers, you know, really aren't about some sort of cyclical issue in the U.S. economy. It's about something more deeply described as a breakdown. The idea that the middle class gives you a guarantee, or the working class gives you some sort of guarantee of a sustainable income, that promise cannot be kept for millions and millions of Americans anymore.
Absolutely. As you know, before the recession, 36 million Americans lived in food insecure households, basically faced hunger. Now the number is about 50 million. And sometimes other people in the media give the impression, well, the newly hungry, they're the virtuous hungry. They're people who look like us. And I think there's some sort of racial coding behind that language. The fact of the matter is, way before the recession, as you pointed out, there were long-term structural issues in our economy. And we'll all say, oh, people need more of an education. That's true. But in other Western industrialized societies, the people who clean offices at night are paid enough to feed their families, and they're not here. And folks who do those vital jobs, you know, work in hospitals, take care of our sick parents, they don't need bachelor's degrees, and they need to be paid enough to feed their family. So I hope the president also makes good on his 2008 pledge to call for a raise in the minimum wage.
So what should we be thankful for on this Thanksgiving, and what image of national hunger insecurity should we be mindful of on this Thanksgiving?
We should be thankful that the federal safety net programs essentially have worked. The fact of the matter is, even with this grave problem here, we don't have the mass starvation you'd see in Somalia or North Korea. That's because tens of millions of our neighbors are getting our help through taxpayer-subsidized programs. What we really ought to be concerned about is the national input outrage that we would go even a few hours with people without food as a result of a natural disaster. We don't have that collective outrage that people go without food for years as part of man-made and woman-made economic and social service disasters.
Joel Berg is executive director of the New York City Coalition Against Hunger and a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Joel, thanks so much.
Thank you.